Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4, entitled The Atrocities of King Kamsa. Today we're on text number 21. We'll kindly repeat. Tasmad bhadre svatanayan maya vyapaditan api ma anushocha Yataha sarva svakritam vindate avashaha tasmat bhadre svatanayan maya vyapaditanati manushocha yataha sarva svakritam vindate avashaha Tasmat bhadre svatanayan maya vyapaditanati manushochayatah sarva svakritam vindate vashah Tasmat bhadre svatanayan maya vyapaditanati मानुषोचयतः सर्वः स्वकृतं विन्दते वशः तस्मात् भद्रे स्वतनयान् मया व्यापादितानपि मानुषोचयतः सर्वः Svakratam vindate vashah Tasmat bhadre svatanayan Maya vyapaditanapi Nanushocha yatah sarva Svakratam vindate vashah व्यापारितानपि मानुषोचयतः सर्वा स्वकृतं विन्दते वशः स्मार भद्रे सुतनयान् व्यापारितानपि मानुषोचयतः सर्वः स्वकृतं विन्दते वशः तस्मात् भद्रे सुतनयान् मया व्यापादितानपि मानुषोचयतः सर्वः स्वकृतं विन्दते वशः तस्मात् भद्रे स्वतनयान् मया व्यापादितानपि मानुषोचयतः सर्वः स्वकृतं विन्दते वशः तस्मात् therefore Bhadre, my dear sister, all auspiciousness unto you. Svatanayan, for your own sons. Maya, by me. Vyapaditan, unfortunately killed. Api, although. Ma, anushocha. Do not be aggrieved. Yataha, because. Saravaha, everyone. Svakratam, the fruited results of one's own deeds. Vindate, suffers or enjoys. Avashaha, under the control of Providence. Translation: my dear sister Devaki, all good fortune unto you. Everyone suffers and enjoys the results of his own work under the control of Providence. Therefore, although your sons have unfortunately been killed by me, please do not lament for them. Please repeat, my dear sister Devaki, all good fortune unto you. Everyone suffers and enjoys the results of his own work under the control of Providence. Therefore, although your sons have unfortunately been killed by me, please do not lament for them. Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, founder and acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, savior of the modern world, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, text 44, Yastvindra gopa matavendra mahosva karna bandhanu rupa bhala bhajanam atanoti karmani nirgahati kintacha bhakti bhajam govindam adipurisham tamaham bhajami. Everyone, beginning from the small insect known as Indra Gopa, up to Indra, the king of the heavenly planets, is obliged to undergo the results of his fruitive activities. We may superficially see that one is suffering or enjoying because of some external causes, but the real cause is one's own fruitive activities. Even when someone kills someone else, it is to be understood that the person who was killed met the fruitive results of his own work, and that the man who killed him acted as the agent of material nature. Thus, Kamsa begged Devaki's pardon by analyzing the matter deeply. He was not the cause of the death of Devaki's sons. Rather, this was their own destiny. Under the circumstances, Devaki should excuse Kamsa and forget his past deeds without lamentation. Kamsa admitted his own fault, but whatever he had done was under the control of Providence. Kamsa might have been the immediate cause for the death of Devaki's sons, but the remote cause was their past deeds. This was an actual fact. Om Jnana Tivinantasya Jnanam Jina Shilakaya Chakshurun Nititam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vajalam Pangum Langhayate Tirim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurun Dinatarnam Tasmat Bhadresataniyan Maya Vyapaditanati Manushochayataha Sarava Swakratam Vindate Vasha. My dear sister Devaki, all good fortune unto you. Everyone suffers and enjoys the results of his own work under the control of Providence. Therefore, although your own sons have unfortunately been killed by me, please do not lament for them. In other words, Kamsa is rationalizing his behavior, as demons do. We also do this. And his idea is that actually even though I murdered all your children, still I'm not to be held responsible for this because they're suffering the results of their own karma. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on this verse, points out, Agyana Ashrayam Ashrayaneva Karma Balamaha. Kamsa is speaking this karma philosophy, but he's doing so in a twisted way. Agyanam Ashrayam. He's taken shelter of ignorance. So, evamukta prakarena naite tava tanaya aham tu tavam naghatitavan tathapya jnana drishtya svatanayan maya vyapaditanapi manushochiti samphayati. In this verse, Kamsa is trying to console his sister. Don't lament, even though I've killed your children. Actually, this is a faulty view, he says. One should understand that I'm just the agent of their own karma. Therefore, the implication is that I shouldn't be held responsible. Sanatana Goswami glosses the word patra here. Srila Prabhupada says it means all auspiciousness tend to you. Certainly that's implicit in this address. Sanatana Goswami says it means sadbuddhimani. You have good intelligence. The implication is that please consider what I'm about to say. Kamsa may or may not believe what he says about this. He may be thinking, she's a less intelligent woman. I can pull the wool over her eyes by speaking very high words. People do this. Anyway, his message is essentially, he's addressing her particularly, saying, don't lament more any more than this. Why? Yatascha vindate bhunkte. Vindate in this verse means, well, vindate in general means to find something or to get something. But here it means bhunkte, just like in Hindi they say, karma phalam bhogna pareva. You have to eat the results of your own karma. Lochan Das Thakur also says this, apne karma bhunje shaman, koho ye Lochan Das. Everybody has to eat the results of what he has. You cook this meal, now you have to eat it. This is the idea. So, this is what he's saying. Yataha, after all, everybody has to experience. And why? Avasha. What does avasha mean? Helpless. They're helpless. They have no say in the matter. And it channati, Sanatana Goswami says. Even without desiring it, you have to undergo this suffering. How bad is it going to be? Nobody knows. When you begin to suffer, you wonder, is this, how long is it going to last? How bad is it going to be? But you don't know. You're helpless. Avasha. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur continues in his own commentary. Tanayan means Dehanam, sons. Swatanayan, your sons. It actually means the bodies of your sons. This is the idea. Anatmatvat Tanaya Buddhyamaya Hatanapi Manushosham. Don't lament, because actually I've only killed the bodies of your sons. I've not killed your sons. Maya panchabhutatmaka deha eva hata. I've only killed these bodies which are made out of the five elements. We discussed this before. Our bodies are made out of earth, water, fire, air, ether, combinations of these elements. And it's not the soul. It's not really the self. Krishna says this also in Bhagavad Gita. It's not incorrect, what Kamsa is saying. But his purport is, ityato mayyavi dosha drishtir nakaya. That you should not hold me to blame. You should not consider this to be my fault. Is it Kamsa's fault? Answer the question. Yes, it is his fault. So therefore he's cheating. This is called Chala Dharma. In the 7th canto, chapter 15, I think it's texts 12 through 14, we find Krishna explains to Uddhava five kinds of irreligion that pose as religion. Five different types. One is to do another person's duty. Another person is to concoct your own duty that's not in the Shastra. And in this way, there are five different kinds that he mentions. One of them is chala. And chala means out-and-out cheating. You know that what you're saying is bogus. But you're saying it anyway, in the guise of preaching to someone. So this is out-and-out cheating. Pure hypocrisy. So it seems as if this is what Kamsa is doing here. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur continues, even if you think that this is ignorance, still you shouldn't lament. In this way, as Sridhar Swami says, he's taking shelter of this consideration of karma, but in the wrong way. How so? Baladeva Bhushan explains this in his own commentary. Nanu dehad anya atmeti satyam. If it's true that you're something other than the body, that would be the soul, atma. If this is true, even then, Devaki might argue, mat jata deha yogena te mat putra yad anandakara deha vinashan mat anandakshitiritichet. Means, my sons may be actually not these bodies that you've killed, but they're the atma inhabiting those bodies and now sent elsewhere by your grace. Firki, because I have a connection with them. They're born of me. They're my sons. They brought me so much happiness. And now with the destruction of their bodies, you've destroyed my happiness. This is her argument. So to that, he replies, yata sarva. What is the line? Yata sarva svakritam vindate. Everybody, after all, has to enjoy the results of what they themselves have done. This is his argument. Iti tesham karme veha evidrsham. Asi. Their karma is just so. This is his argument. So, madkaran mrityuriti mayi cha dosha drishtir mabhut. You should not assign blame unto me because they were destined to die. And Srila Prabhupada actually validates this. Sometimes we consider, we say, these so-called cows, American cows are not really cows, because mostly they're born to be killed. Beefalo, they call them. They're born to be killed again, because they have killed cows in their last lives. We know it from Shastra. As many hairs as there are on the body of a cow that is killed, when you eat the cow, or when you are involved in any way in the slaughter of the cow, you have to take as many births and be killed as there are hairs on the body of that cow. So someone can argue, well, if they're taking birth as cows only to be killed in this way, then what is the sin in killing them? People who are too clever, they calculate like this. We're all too clever. We all calculate like this. How can we? Maybe not in such gross ways, but in more subtle ways, we also try to figure out some loophole in the system of karma by which we can continue with our questionable activities in material existence. So Srila Prabhupada's purport therefore emphasizes the fact that everybody is avasha, helplessly, under the control of providence. Likhitam abhilalate pranchitam kaha samartha. Even if you take birth as the sun, which gives life to all beings within this universe, those who are twice initiated, they chant the Gayatri Mantra thrice a day. What are we meditating on in Gayatri Mantra? The sun is, by its energy, the sun is permeating the gross adipautic world made of these five elements. And the sun is also permeating the subtle worlds of the gods. And the sun is also permeating everywhere. Everywhere in this material world, the sun is going there. Lower, middle, and upper realms. And all life depends on the sun. This even modern science will confirm. You remove the sun, everything dies. Everybody dies. We all freeze. So the sun is sustaining all life. How? Ashesha teja. Infinite potency. It's inconceivable. Because of this achintya shakti, therefore the sun is considered to be the representative of Narayana. Early in the morning, when the Vrijavasis wake up, and first before sunrise, because according to Shastra, if you wake up after sunrise, then not only does it destroy your health because all of the toxins in your body recirculate again and cannot, because they're not, they haven't been eliminated. We have to eliminate those wastes before our shower in the morning. And the shower, in order to qualify as a sacred bath, which is a nitya karma, niyatam karma, it has to be before sunrise. If we wait, then it's bad for our health. It's also bad for our consciousness because we incur sin. So the sun is very regular in his duty. Why can't we be regular in our duty? Every day the sun is rising exactly when it is supposed to come. And every day he's enlivening the world with achintya shakti, ashesha teja, infinite potency. And still, even this sun sometimes has to be swallowed by an ahu, eclipsed. Even the moon, which is supplying all the energy to all medicines, to all plant life, all flowers, fruits, vegetables, everything that we require, the moon has very nourishing energy. Cooling shine of the moon. It's as potent as the sun, but in a very soft way, feminine way. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Gam Avishya, entering into this earth, Gam Avishya cha Sarvani Bhutani, Dharayami Ahamojasa. I facilitate life, I sustain all life in this world through Ojas. What is Ojas? Ojas is that subtle property within the psychophysical tabernacle, as Prabhupada says, that allows prana to flow through the body. Prana. Prana means life itself, the life energy. Unless there is ojas, the life energy cannot do this. Therefore, we say, if one does not practice brahmacharya, retaining semen, then he loses his ojas. And again, just as when one rises late in the morning, he becomes sick, same thing. And the intelligence is also lost, because these things are very powerful. So, moon is supplying all this to us. Without ojas, we cannot process prana. It cannot flow through our system. This is the moon's mercy. And yet, even this moon has to be eclipsed sometimes by Rahu. Therefore, the conclusion is, likhitamapilalate pranchitam kaha samartha. Whatever is written on your forehead, nobody's able to overcome this. Nobody can overcome this. The story of Vikramaditya, have you heard? Vikramaditya, he's a famous king, mythological king. We don't hear about him in the Bhagavatam, and we don't have record in history, although there may have been many kings with his name. So he was said to have been the king of Ujjain, and he was blessed by Lakshmi Devi. Lakshmi Devi gave him the benediction, you will always have full facility for whatever you want to do. So he became a little bit proud. As kings do, he arranged for a big sacrifice and he invited all the august personalities of the universe, including the nine planets. Who are the nine planets? Just like we have days of the week named after these planets. We have the moon, we have Mangala, we have Buddha, we have all these are nine planets. They're the ones who administer our karma. Some of them are called krura grahas. That means cruel planets, like the sun and Rahu Ketu, Shani. When they're administering our karma, we generally suffer more. This is seen in Jyotish. So he invited all these planets and he gave them all the respective seats of the elements that represent them in this world. Gold represents which of these demigods? Anyone know? Sun, yes. Silver? Yes. So like this. Iron. Who has iron? Shani. You know, because in India they bring a little pot with oil in the bottom, little iron shani there. And they expect you to throw a coin in every Saturday. In Vrindavan they do this also. So Shani Dev got the iron sea, and he felt a little bit slighted. But Maharaj Vikramaditya didn't mind the fact that Shani Dev was offended. And Shanidev noticed this also. So he thought, you just wait. When I'm in charge of your karma, you're going to know it. So Maharaj Vikramaditya, he forgot all about it, and he went along with his business. Sometime later, he had heard, his servant came and reported, there are very good horses from Sindh being sold in the market, and one man has a very fabulous horse. This horse is said to be able to fly. Now, Kshatriya is always calculating in terms of power relationships. So he was thinking, if I could have such an advantage, then that would be a very good thing. So he sent his servant to go and check it out. No, he went with his servant to go and check it out. And the person selling this horse said, you just get on this horse and you kick it once, the horse will take off flying. If you kick it twice, the horse will come back again. And Maharaj Vikramaditya thought, this is a pretty good deal. So he tried it, test drive. And he kicked the horse, and the horse, sure enough, took off into the sky with Maharaj Vikramaditya on top. And he's looking around below, he's seeing everything, he said, wow, what power I have now. Then he kicked the horse twice to come back, and the horse did not stop. The flying horse continued to fly. And he kicked it furiously to try to get the horse to stop. Instead, the horse got angry and threw him. Maharaj Vikramaditya fell off this horse into the forest, through the trees, cut himself badly, landed on the ground half-conscious, bruised. And then he was lost in the middle of thick woods, jungle. He didn't know where to go, whether to turn right or left. Meanwhile, it's getting dark. He can't find anything. He's hungry, he's tired, he's injured. He had to spend the night in the forest. And during the night, he's hearing the growling sound of lions. Has anyone ever heard a lion roaring? We don't have lions in Chicago. But if you hear the sound that a lion makes, it is the most terrifying sound. You cannot imagine there's an animal with such power as a lion. Very terrifying sound. So he's hearing this all night. Then the only water there to drink is this water that's very questionable because it's stagnant. So he's injured, he's exhausted, he's hungry, he needs water. Without water in 3 days, he'll die. So he had to drink it, made him sick again. Then finally, he's cutting his way through the woods somehow or other, fighting off the snakes and other creatures there. He found some path. So he's walking on this path, wherever it will go is better than where I am. But then on the path, he saw that there are some daku coming, three dacoits. Robbers. And they look at him and he's dressed like a king, even though he's torn up a bit. So they beat him up, they took all of his jewelry and they left him for dead. After some time, he woke up again and he continued walking and he came to a village and he found that there's a tree, so he just sat under this tree to begin to consider, what am I going to do next? The householder across the street took compassion on him and sent the kids out to give him some prasada, so he could eat something at least. And he doesn't have anywhere to go, he doesn't know what to do, so he's just at least sitting there. And then after some days, this householder sees he's not leaving, so he says, let me engage him. He said, would you mind doing a few things around the house for us? He said, yeah, I can do that. I'm actually Maharaj Vikramaditya Vijayan. So the householder could understand, okay, he's crazy, but he seems to be harmless, so. He was doing like that for some time. Eventually he became a trusted servant in the house. Now, the man whose house he was serving in, he was a merchant, Sethi. So he had a daughter who was marriageable age, and he had to go and arrange for the wedding. So he sent this Maharaj Vikramaditya to go buy some pearls in the town for his daughter's wedding. And he did that. He found some very nice pearls while he was there. This man was selling a picture of a swan that he thought was very pretty, so he thought, why not? I'll get that also. He brought it back and gave it to his master. Then that night, the girl was looking at her pearls and put them away. She went to bed. During the night, she had a dream. And in her dream, the swan in the picture came out of the picture and was eating all the pearls. Then when she woke up in the morning, pearls are gone. So she immediately, all suspicion fell on Maharaj Vikramaditya, and the householder questioned him severely, and he didn't have answers. The only answer to the question was that this swan came out of the picture and was eating the pearls. So he took him to the king, and the king immediately understood this man is a thief. So he cut off his hands, and he cut off his legs. In the old days, that's what they used to do to thieves. So what is he going to do now? And he banished him from the kingdom. He said, get out of here. So he wandered for some distance, and then he saw that there's one of these wheels that they used to use to grind oil. They send bullocks, yoke them to the wheel, and it turns around and around, and it grinds the seeds and turns them into oil. So the man who was taking care of that place, he said, okay, maybe just sit here and make sure that these buffalo keep working, because you have to do something. So, and without hands and feet, what else is he going to do? Now, Maharaj Vikramaditya happened to be a very excellent singer. He was very good in music. So he started singing just to pass the time while he's watching these buffalo work. Meanwhile, the daughter of the king, the princess, she was in the nearby palace. She could hear someone singing, and she was too fond of music. She was completely into music. And she, sight unseen, she said, whoever is singing this beautifully, I'm going to marry that man. So then, somehow or other, it came to pass. I don't remember the details. But she sent a servant, I think, to bring this person. And then she brought him to the palace. And when her father saw who this was, he thought, oh, not him. How did you manage to fall in love with this guy, of all people? So he said, I've had enough problem with you. I think it's time for you to be killed right away. So he decided he was going to kill him on the spot because he was just causing too many problems. At that time, an unidentifiable Brahmin came, an old man, and he said, stop. He said, he looked at Maharaj Vikramaditya, and he said, remember me? I'm Shanidev. I'm the one who sent the horse. I'm the one who sent the picture of the swan. I'm the one who sent all these problems to you. I did this. So Maharaj Vikramaditya fell at Shani's feet. He apologized, and the aparat was erased, and somehow or other he was reinstated. Shani again gave him his hands and feet back, and on top of everything else, he married the princess and lived happily ever after. This is how fairy tales end. It's not how our lives end. Our lives end next to a beeping pole in a hospital bed with nobody there. But the point is, in this long story, Likitamabilate prontitam kaha samartha. Nobody can overcome what fate has in store for you. One by one, you can erase a karma through atonement, prayaschitta. We were discussing this last night. Through gyan, you can also overcome to some degree some of the suffering that entails. But you cannot actually erase the hard-knotted desire for material enjoyment, which is the cause of all of our problems. You cannot get that out of the heart except through taking shelter of the lotus feet of Vasudeva. Sroto ganastamaranam bhaja Vasudevam. This is therefore the advice given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this is the thing that Srila Prabhupada has chosen to dilate on in his purport. We may find that somebody is guilty of being the agent of our karma. Or we may become the agent of someone else's karma, wittingly or unwittingly. But actually the real cause is remote. Therefore we can't judge. We can't even understand the situation. Understanding is the basis of judgment. If we can't understand the situation, how can we judge? And, more importantly, why is it wrong for Kamsa to kill? There's only one reason. It's a very simple reason. What is that reason? If they're destined to be killed, and probably by him, then what is the wrong? This is his argument. So why is his argument wrong? Who has some ideas about this? Who? Okay, but why should he not kill? He happens to be the king, after all. Yes. This is the answer. This is the answer. Kshati, the word here is used. I think Bali Vidyabhushan. Devaki says, Maranda Kshatiriti Che. This is the destruction of my duty. What does Kshat mean? Kshat means harm. You're destroying my happiness. My only happiness is these children. You've destroyed this. What does Kshatriya mean? Kshanna iti. It's like many Punjabis, they have this name. Khanna. You've heard this? Last name. Gopal Krishna Maharaj. His name is also Khanna. It's a Kshatriya name. It means I'm not going to hurt you. A Kshatriya has the duty to protect all of his prajas. So Kamsa's duty as a Kshatriya was not to kill, but to protect. Even they're meant to be killed, and even they're meant to be killed by him, but he should not agree to that. Because that represents a dereliction of his duty. This is a new concept for Western minds. Indians can understand to some degree. Western minds don't get it. We don't have the word for dharma because we don't have an understanding of the concept. But only because Kamsa had another duty. Otherwise, everything that he's saying is correct. But he was shunning his duty. He was doing paradharma. He was doing paradharma. Whose dharma is it to administer the bad karma? We've already mentioned. There are so many planets. They're working as the agents of so many. They're minor demigods, you can say. They're working as the agents of so many highly placed administrative demigods. Mid-level cosmic management, you can say. It is their duty. It is not our duty. Vigilante law, as they say. It's not our duty. We have to do our own duty. Apana karma. This is throughout Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this. So, Kamsa admitted his own fault, but whatever he had done was under the control of providence. Kamsa may have been the immediate cause of the death of Devaki's sons, but the remote cause was their past deeds. This was an actual fact. Okay, does anybody have any questions or any comments on any of this? Important points. A few simple points, but they're very subtle and very important. Yes. This is a good question. We know that among the four defects of the conditioned souls, well, what are those four defects? All conditioned souls display four defects. What are they? We have imperfect senses, therefore, we make mistakes, we become illusioned, and what's relevant here? We cheat. Kamsa is cheating. He may be trying to justify it to himself even, but that's also cheating. We actually have all knowledge, all of us. We have it, but we don't want it. This is the problem. Matta smriti jnanam apohanam cha. We don't want to recognize the fact of our situation. Therefore, Krishna covers us over so that we don't have to recognize the fact, our factual situation. This is, as I see it, this is Kamsa's position in this verse. He's maybe trying to justify it to himself even. Certainly he's trying to justify it to his sister, softening the situation as much as he can. So, yes, of course he's guilty. He's a murderer. But it's also not untrue that they have done something. One of the commentators on this verse puts it very nicely. He says, karma vashe, hari vashe va. Either he is under the control, either these children are under the control of their own karma, or they're under Krishna's direct control. But somehow or other, we are always avasha. Avasha means vasha. What does vasha mean? Yeah, to control someone. Vashikarana mantra. Sometimes the tantrics, they sell you a mantra to bring someone under your control. People who are losers, they go for this sort of thing. So, vasha means to be controlled. Avasha means to be helpless. You have no control over the situation. It's a very disempowering feeling. But this is actually our factual status. And we have to undergo our karma, whatever it may be. Now, the agent of our karma may be there. But that person has his own duty to worry about. Even he's the agent of our own karma. Avasha means we're helpless. We're under the control of nature at all times. So we cheat in order to deny this. We convince ourselves that we know what's happening or that we have authority in a particular realm where we don't. No control of the situation. He doesn't seem very apologetic to me. That's a more direct answer to your question. It seems to me more like he's cheating. That's my view of the situation, from what the text says and what the commentary says. Kshamatvam, he says in a coming verse, please be merciful to such a poor-hearted person as me, since both of you are saintly persons. Please excuse my atrocities. Having said this, Kamsa fell at the feet of Vasudeva and Devaki, his eyes full of tears of regret. This is called Shmashan Vairagya. A person becomes detached at funerals. But as soon as he gets back into his old association, what happens? His old habits come back again very quickly. Therefore, this cheating, actually. I remember once there was a devotee. He was causing some problems in one temple. And I was talking with this person's spiritual master, and he had a long meeting with him and the regional secretary, and it seemed as if the person was contrite and repentant and was going to rectify himself. So the person's spiritual master asked me for my opinion, for what it's worth. He said, what do you think? Is it going to be okay now? And I said, we'll see, because time only tells. At the moment, anybody can say and do anything, because Kamsa is doing that now as well. So he released them, but then again, we know that he resumed his nonsense very, very quickly, because a demon, without the mercy of the holy name, what can a demon do? What can repression accomplish, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita? Krishna himself says, everyone is impelled to act, compelled to act, by his own nature. You cannot stop acting for a moment, and your actions will always be in accordance with your acquired nature. So what can you do? You can do nothing. You're helpless. But Krishna can do everything. Therefore we say, it is only through bhakti that this thing can be overcome. Otherwise we remain helpless. But Krishna is all-powerful. Yatra yogeshwaro krishno, yatra partho dhanartharaha. Tatra shriir vijayo budir truva nidir vatim mama. Krishna says, all these wonderful things, they're ours when we surrender to him. Work on his side, his purpose is never frustrated. Satya kama, satya sankalpa, Shruti Mantra says. So Kamsa's not ready to do that because, I mean, he's not really a demon. Also, this is another consideration. He's only acting like a demon. This is Leela. Therefore, the commentator says, karma vaja, hari vaja va. Either the situation is under the control of Hari directly, which it happens to be in this particular case, or it's under karma, which is the normal occurrence. I don't know if I'm answering the question. Anything else?
When it comes to karma being handled by the planets and how we do bad things, the Shani and other planets will take care of the punishment that we can get. How is the modern judiciary system, and if there's a murder, if they pass a judgment on him, how do we see that?
Until about 150 years ago or 200 years ago, the Indian judicial system, as you may know, what do you call a courthouse in India? Nyayalaya. So the Indian judicial system, until maybe within the last 200 years, used to be based on Shastra. It used to be the British, for all their atrocities, they actually administered Hindu law for Hindus and Sharia law for Muslims. That was their way of dealing with the situation. When you have civic laws or federal or state laws that are based on Dharma Shastra, then those laws are perfect and Dharma can be dispensed through that law. But when you concoct laws based on mutual accord or mutual desire, democracy, then it may or may not be in accordance with Dharma, and it may be beneficial or it may actually be harmful. So, does that answer your question? Yes, Rajiv. Aparatha sahasrani kriyante aharnisham maya dasoham iti mam tvakshamasva madhusudana. This is one prayer after the deity worship to relieve ourselves of offenses, we say. My dear Lord, day and night I'm committing thousands and thousands of offenses. You know this. But considering me your servant, kindly forgive me. Humility. When you surrender to someone in humility, who but a stone-hearted person cannot be moved by that? Even the greatest aparati, if he bows down at the person that he's offended, he will be forgiven if that person is a human being. Srila Prabhupada, sometimes people did the most unbelievable things, and Srila Prabhupada forgave them and never spoke of it again after they surrendered. Because it's understood. We're just learning how to walk. We're going to fall and trip. And we may do so repeatedly even. It takes time. You have to be patient. You have to be determined. You have to follow as best as you can. Keep good association. Avoid bad association. Etc. We just keep going. And hote hote, everything becomes okay. Gradually. Everything becomes resolved. And eventually we find out that I'm able to walk. I don't trip anymore. You need to be patient.
My question is, how do I apologize? How do I put my apology?
This is harder for men, I think, than it is for women. Men have two big egos, but that's exactly what we have to do. Just like women, that you see how the Dharma Shastra regulates us. The women have too many strong desires. They would eat up the whole universe if you let them. Therefore, the women are a little bit kept in check. Right? A lot of restraint is there, socially, to counter that tendency. Similarly, men, they have two big egos. So they're constantly there, chastised by the spiritual master, constantly they're encouraged to develop humility, constantly there, you have to do like this, you see. So, we practice. But humility is a great gem. And to simply directly apologize to someone, say, I'm sorry, this is the last thing a man will do. Is it not? It's rare, at least. Should be more common than it is. At least we can say that. Is that okay? All right, yes. Okay. Go ahead.
I was explaining, you mentioned in the beginning of the class, in terms of, you know, Kamsa speaking very nicely about, you know, Atma Tattva, you know, not the body and the control of destiny and all these things. And at times, you know, obviously he was cheating because his prachar was not matching his achar. So his actions were matching what he's speaking.
That's called chala, hypocrisy.
Yes. So at times, we also, as devotees, many of us were still affected by the bodily conception of life. We don't have full realization of Atma Tattva. And we have to teach Atma Tattva when we are, you know, teaching Krishna consciousness.
We actually have to preach Atma Tattva to ourselves also. That's why every page of Srila Prabhupada's books repeats these basic instructions. Dehi osminyata dehi komaram yogana. We don't get it. How do you know you don't get it? Approach death. Get very close to death and see how you do it. We don't know anything. Everybody freaks out at the time of death or when they're facing death imminently. Nobody's ready. This is Atma Tattva.
So, is that considered the word is, you know, hypocrisy or cheating? Or, you know,
this is a good question. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he makes a distinction between, well, there is a distinction between namabhas and namaparadha. And shuddhanam, of course, we know that's pure devotional service. When we're immature, but sincerely striving for Krishna consciousness, pure Krishna consciousness, it's understood that we will make some mistakes, but we have to be sincere. And those mistakes will be overlooked. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Abhichet sudurācāro pajane māmanenis ananyabhāk sādhureva samantavya. The person has, in that condition, that person has to be considered a sadhu because he's honest. Sadhu, the meaning of the word sadhu is honest. You have only to be honest. You can only be honest. That is the best we can do in Kali Yuga. The other four legs of religion are gone, but there's a little honesty. To the extent that we're honest, we can make advancement. This is the key. So immaturity is excusable, but when we're deliberately doing something, nonsense, something we know is wrong, whether out of habit or just rascaldom, that is another matter. For that we're culpable. That's my understanding. Is it clearing the issue?
Some other person come to apologize and the person will send him over and over.
think you're asking that if someone offends you continually and continually asks for forgiveness as well, then how do we deal with that? That's a good question. Sometimes that does happen. And in fact, it's happening here because Kamsa is, you know, I mean, nominally he's apologizing, but it doesn't seem like it's very, either it's not sincere or he's just very covered by his demoniac nature. And sometimes we have to deal with it. So we have to be careful not to enable abuse, as they say. Someone who is an abuser, you know, we should tolerate offenses, minor offenses especially, to ourselves. But we don't want to nourish that tendency by continually accepting the apology. You see? Sometimes it's better to just dissociate and or just keep a distance and not deal with the person. It all depends on the time, place, and circumstances. This kind of question is why we have gurus, because they look at details in disciples' lives and they help us unravel this sort of situation and deal with it progressively. That's about the best answer I can give in a general way. You had a question? Behind, actually, was first. I think you're asking that we all have our acquired nature and we're impelled by that nature to act in some certain ways. So supposing we have a demoniac nature, then what is the hope for us because we can only act according to our nature? Is that what you're asking?
No, nature is different and destiny is different. Even my mind has a nature different. Because destiny has a different.
Yes. So then the question is, how do we overcome that tendency or the strength of fate? How can it be overcome? Yeah, even if we have a good nature, sometimes by fate one is impelled to do wild things. Like Vyasadeva. Who is Vyasadeva's mother? Huh? How was he born? Vyasadeva. Or another example is Buddha. We mentioned the planets. Buddha. Which day of the week is Buddha? So which planet, what do we call Buddha in English? Mercury. How is Mercury born? Does anyone know Buddha? He was born of illicit sex. Soma, the moon god, kidnapped Brihaspati's wife, Tara, and he impregnated her. And the sun was very beautiful and very qualified in many ways, because after all, this is the moon god. There are accidents even on royal roads. Even if you're a demigod, these things happen, you see? So fate is truly inexorable. Whatever is fated, it's hard to say. Karma vishe, hari vishe va. It may be what Krishna wants, it may just be what your karma is, but it's very difficult to overcome it. What can you say? At the end of Kurukshetra, this is what Yudhishthira Maharaj said, manye, Kalam. I think this is just Kala. This is fate. This whole battle is, I've seen my whole dynasty has been destroyed in this fratricidal war. Sometimes it's like that. It's hard to overcome, but Krishna consciousness is possible in any circumstance. This is the thing. It may be that we're not meant to overcome our fate also. The different acharyas, they say different things about this. Some of them are some of them are a little discouraging. Madhvacharya, for example, he says that you have different natures that are eternal in this world. Some people have demoniac natures and they don't have any capacity for anything else, is what he says. And it's not clear that our own acharyas entirely disagree with him, to me at least. You can interpret it in different ways, but that's one way of seeing things, and some acharyas see things that way. Anyway, fate is almost, it's almost impossible to overcome. If you think about what liberation means, liberation can be defined as being free from karma. But what is that freedom? It doesn't mean that the actions and the reactions are not going to go on. It means that we no longer identify with them, and in that sense we no longer become affected by them. It's like the example is given in the Bhagavatam, the coconut. When a coconut becomes dry, the inside of the coconut you can rattle it and you can hear. It's detached, but it's still inside the coconut. Our position is like that in this world. We may be working apparently within a karmic paradigm, but because of our Krishna consciousness, we're actually detached from it, and in that sense only we're liberated. But it's not that the actions and the reactions cease to exist, you see? So fate is inexorable in that way. Now, we've read this verse that Prabhupada quotes, Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. For those who participate in devotional service, Lord Brahma says, their karmas are burned up by Krishna. And that's true, but they may not be entirely burned up. They may be partially burned up. Or they may be burned up, but gradually, you see? So from our perspective, we can't tell what's going on at any time. We can't understand, am I going to have to undergo this heavy fate? Am I going to have to undergo my whole karma in this particular whatever period you're in? But it's up to Krishna. And we can't even really tell. Is this situation that I'm having to undergo, is it imposed by my karma or is it imposed by Krishna? You'll never know these things. Because it's kavayopiyatra mohitaha. Even the wise men, Krishna says, are bewildered by karma, trying to figure out what is karma, what is akarma, what is vikarma. Karma is too difficult to figure out. But it doesn't really matter for a devotee, because if we are in Krishna consciousness, we're unaffected. This is the point. Unaffected. What do you really want? Do you want that the karma should not be there, or do you want that you don't suffer? We want that we don't suffer. That is always possible for Krishna consciousness. Is that clear? Okay. You had a question? It's a big topic, actually. Very big topic. Well, I want to be careful what I say about this. Several of the acharyas have written that Agnanam Ashrayameva Karma Vadamaha. He's speaking this karma philosophy, but in a way that is actually taking shelter of illusion. And what else? Agnanashrayo karmavade pyevam vicharena nashokavakasha iti bhava. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says the same thing. Nobody really negates what he's saying, because what he's saying is actually true. But we're not talking about what he's saying, we're talking about what's motivating him, I think. Is that what your question is based on that? Yeah, I'm asking.
The question is based on the statement you made in the course of the class. I think you're referencing, was it self-care?
Cleanliness, mercy, truthfulness, austerity. These four legs of the bull of Dharma. And the only one left is honesty. Is that what you're... Oh, that's different.
You had referenced that there were four kinds of religion and that Kamsa particularly was practicing cheating religion. So
Adharmas, five kinds actually. So then the question is what? Tala. That's my interpretation. As I understand it, he's cheating here. That's my impressions, for what it's worth. Maybe I'm wrong. You have to see what the commentaries say here, but it looks to me like he's cheating. Either he's cheating or he's concocting. And there's a lot of overlap as well. There's a lot of overlap. For example, Paradharma, this is another one. Krishna says twice in Bhagavad Gita, don't try to do someone else's duty. But actually that's what Kamsa is doing. It is not his duty to kill Devaki's children. Nobody has the prescribed duty of killing your sister's children. You know, it's not in the Dharma Shastra to kill your nephews. So, you know, he's doing someone else's duty and he's also cheating, and you know, it's a little bit of overlap is there. You can study this in more depth. It's in 7th Canto, chapter 15, text 12 through 14. Is that okay? Anything else? Okay, so we'll stop there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.